Malta used last week's UN General Assembly to declare that cryptocurrencies are, quote, the inevitable future of money. The Mediterranean nation has been working hard to establish itself as the world's blockchain island and to make trading and issuing virtual money easier. But it's not alone. A number of other smaller countries like the Marshall Islands, Gibraltar and Bermuda are also keen to accommodate cryptocurrencies. So what does that mean for the global cryptocurrency landscape, especially with many of the larger economies still scrambling to catch up? Angela Walsh is Associate Professor at St. Mary's University School of Law in Texas and a Research Fellow at University College London's Centre for Blockchain Technology. Thank you so much for your time. Malta's Prime Minister says cryptocurrencies are the inevitable future of money. What do you and your colleagues think?
I don't think it's inevitable. Some people within the cryptocurrency space will tell you that is true, but there are plenty who don't think it is the inevitable future of money, and I think that's quite a bold statement.
Tell me, do you think if it's not inevitable, what are the conditions for it in the future? What are your ideas about what might happen here?
Sure. So I think there's a big fight to be had between the nation states who have had control over money for a long time. And if cryptocurrencies are the future of money, that would effectively mean that nation states are ceding this sovereign privilege that they've had forever to some other type of control or system. And that would be a big deal. Central banks and policymakers around the world are very much looking at this, but I don't think they're going to cede that control.
Malta is not the only country encouraging cryptocurrency investors. I mentioned, you know, the Marshall Islands, Gibraltar, there are others. What do they stand to gain from embracing cryptocurrencies?
Well, at this moment, I would say there's a lot of competition going on between various jurisdictions around the world to bring in jobs and investment capital, essentially. So these smaller nations, I think, have seen that possibility and are looking at this as the next asset class that's going to have a whole bunch of industry built up around it. And they're trying to be the first ones to position themselves to get those jobs. And bigger nations, as you said in your intro, they are somewhat being left behind. They are the ones who have to, I think, be the grown-ups in the room and think about the larger consequences of these decisions.
What are the blockchain and cryptocurrency companies looking for from countries?
Okay, so one, I think it's regulatory clarity. So in the US, the critique has been that regulators like the SEC have essentially been trying to give regulatory guidance by doing enforcement actions, going after companies and saying, well, that was bad, well, that was bad, well, that was bad. And kind of by process of elimination, companies are supposed to figure out, you know, what they're supposed to do. So they're seeking some clarity about what behaviors are okay. Secondly, I mean, some of these countries are offering incentives. Regulatory sandboxes are actually a new tool that has really caught on, and it's kind of a funny term, but the idea is that kind of like kids maybe play in a sandbox, companies who are in a sandbox get to not to have the real rules apply to them for a while they're playing and developing their business. And then maybe once they see if their ideas work, then more rules would apply. So that's a trend that's being used in many jurisdictions around the world.
Some of the larger economies have suggested that the seeds are being sown for cryptocurrency tax havens. Do you think that could be true?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised to see that. It's interesting to me that some of the countries that we see being super crypto friendly are ones that have been kind of tax havens in the past. And there, of course, is concern that as these smaller jurisdictions are moving forward with extremely favorable regulatory situations for crypto companies and blockchain companies, well, that means that because this is a global and highly mobile set of players in this industry, that maybe the horse has kind of left the barn on this. It may be difficult for the larger jurisdictions to set up a more restrictive regulatory environment if the companies can just go to these, maybe if they're not tax havens, just like regulatory havens. However, these laws all interact. So if these crypto companies want to serve customers, investors in countries that have a more restrictive regulatory climate, then they're going to have to figure out who they're going to serve and how they're going to comply with a whole web of potentially differing regulations.
Could it be problematic if we have some countries working to encourage cryptocurrencies and then we've got others essentially trying to restrict them? What's going to happen at an international level if there's these, you know, very different lanes going on?
Yeah, it could be very strange. At some point, there's going to have to be more international cooperation and international discussion to figure out just what we want to do with this new beast.
Okay, so that there's going to have to be international cooperation because essentially globalization means that it has to happen. But does it look like it's going to happen?
Yeah, I think these small countries maybe would not want that to happen if they have been the leaders and they feel like, okay, we're attracting big business. All those small countries really have no incentive to cooperate with others if they're seeing jobs and investment coming into their countries. Yeah.
A long road ahead. Angela, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Angela Walsh is Associate Professor at St. Mary's University School of Law in Texas and a Research Fellow at the University College London Centre for Blockchain Technologies. This is RN Drive.